Imago Providence invites you to discover the languages of love, how to turn conflict into togetherness, and keep you loving for a lifetime. This summit is designed to inspire us to view conflict from a new perspective, to see conflict as a natural process, an opportunity to heal and grow in life and in relationships. We've invited the participation of nationally and internationally esteemed psychologists, therapists, scholars, relationship coaches, mediators, authors, and spiritual teachers, all to share how we can use conflict to build better, mature relationships. You will gather the information you need to invite you into your own personal and spiritual growth. Our mission at Imago Providence is to empower, inspire, and support women globally to create and sustain mutually fulfilling, healing, and egalitarian relationships. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to Discover the Languages of Love Summit. I'm your host, Paula Smith, and my guest today is Dr. Jenny Gardy. Jenny is an integrative coach and journey therapist who uses a whole person approach that deals with issues on multiple levels. She acts as a facilitator to many diverse groups, helping them transform and heal their lives. This is our recent conversation.
You come to us from South Africa. And I wanted you on the summit because you have a very interesting journey, and I would love for you to share who you are with our listening audience.
Well, Paula, thank you very much for asking me to be on the summit, and I think it is a wonderful thing that you're doing because the essence of how we all live is relationship. So to address it in a way like this, I think, is really important. So thank you very much for that. My history of relationship is, I suppose we're all in relationship all our lives, but my key times in my life was when I was 13, my mother left. And I found that at 13 years old, in that time, which was 1974, I had absolutely no support and no resources. So I did not know what to do with the feelings, with the anger, with the situation that I found myself in. So what I did is I turned within and I created walls and I built defenses and I did math. So I found that by working very hard, I didn't have to address how I was feeling. And this worked for a while. I didn't have a particularly good relationship with my mother. My siblings and myself, we stayed with my father. And I found that as I grew older, I was driven to try and, I think, just relieve the feelings that I was feeling that I didn't quite know how to deal with. Then I entered a relationship with a man who became my husband, and we had a 34-year relationship. And what I found is that he was a mirror. He reflected it very much the same sort of things as my mother reflected back to me. So the pattern started repeating. And what I'm not sure if you know is that my relationship of 34 years, we separated in December. So I've learned a lot of life lessons through this long journey, which started a very long time ago. And where I think the essential shift happened for me was about 15 years ago. I was living in London, and I developed heavy metal poisoning. And I found that I had lead, mercury, and arsenic poisoning, which completely flattened me. I was man down. It affected all my systems. And it was a very difficult journey because I had two very young children. In fact, I remember lying on the carpet near my front door crying because I didn't know how I would fetch them from school. But I was reading an article on alchemy one day, and I read the statement that in every alchemical reaction, you need mercury to make the gold. And in that moment, I realized on a symbolic level that this experience, this journey, was enabling me to find my goal. And I think I really got it then. We eventually left the UK and came to South Africa 10 years ago, which is my home. And part of the journey was needing to come back to my roots, coming back to the land that I absolutely love. And here I did journey work, which is a system that was pioneered by a woman called Brandon Bays. And in this deep journey work, I was able to finally forgive my mother and let go 35 years of anger and resentment and bitterness and pain. And then what I found is that I live in a small town and I didn't have the tools to manage my life in a way that felt appropriate, that felt like it was serving me. And my next journey was with Debbie Ford, who was a wonderful mentor and teacher. And in essence, her work is shadow work. And I found through Debbie's work, particularly the module Spiritual Divorce, which is probably one of the most profound and transformative ways that you can really heal your heart. To me, it was absolutely fantastic. And there I was able to work through the relationship with my husband and release 20-odd years of anger and bitterness. And then on reflection, thinking about how I managed to move past the anger and the pain and the bitterness, both with my mother and with my husband, Anthony, I found that there was one key ingredient that happened for me, and it happened spontaneously, and in retrospect, it was the same for both, and that was that during a process, deep in process, I suddenly thought, what if, it started first with my mother, what if my mother and I, as souls, made a contract to come in incarnation, and she would offer to teach me the lessons of abandonment, betrayal, and forgiveness. And I thought, wow, if she's agreed to come and be the ogre in my life so that I can learn these lessons, that must be one of the most selfless and generous gifts that she could possibly give me. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happened spontaneously when I was deep in process regarding my husband. Mm-hmm. So what really happened there was a shift of perspective. And I think later when we go through the support options, I think that's absolutely critical, is I shifted my vision. I shifted the filters through which I viewed the world. And then in the process, there are a number of features that I found common to Debbie Ford's work, the wonderful spiritual divorce growth work, and a number of other, you know, teachers around the world. And that is, but first of all, you have to address the story and what the story is. And then seeing that the story that we believe may or may not be true. One of the most important gifts and skills that I've learned is about feeling feelings and allowing appropriate feelings. And I also will go into this a bit more later on when we go through the support thing. And then just learning to accept the situation just as it is. And also learning to accept the person for who they are. So not wanting them to be other than who they are. So it's about mourning the loss of the dream of who we want, the perfect mother or father or husband or wife or brother or sister, but really just knowing that that person is just who they are. Finding the gift is key, so that every experience happens as a means of growth, as a way of evolving and learning. And then what I find in my life extremely helpful and very, very powerful is ceremony or ritual of some form, and then to bring in gratitude. And that, in essence, for me, sums up the process that I went through with my particular intimate relationships.
So, Jenny, you also talk about this new paradigm of relationships. Can you say more about that?
Sure. Well, when I was young, I started off with the happy ever after, handsome prince finds princess, riding off into the sunset type idea of relationships. And I think that in a way, the media that we have, Hollywood, the movies, has in essence done us a disservice, because I don't think we are taught to accept relationships really as they are. And in essence, what I've come to believe is that relationships are merely a mirror. They are a mirror to reflect back to us the wounded parts of ourselves and the parts that we need to heal. And I think it's that simple. So if we can move away from the white picket fence, the happy ever after, the two kids, job type relationship, things working, then there's less to be disappointed by. And if we, I love the way Gary Zukav speaks of spiritual partnership, which is really a partnership between equals for the purpose of spiritual growth. And I don't think this is necessarily only in our intimate relationships. I think it's with our friends, with our siblings, with our colleagues. Just to know that relationships are a reflection, they are a mirror. And how can we learn, how can we grow, instead of unrealistic expectations, blame, disappointment. So that's what I think is important to establish. What do we want from relationships, the relationships with our kids? Are we here to tell them what to do? And my experience has been absolutely not. My children have been amongst my greatest teachers, and they have absolutely demanded creative parenting, because the old paradigm that I was exposed to absolutely does not work. So if you want peace, if you want if you want relationships that are actually of any significance, you have to find a new way of dealing with them and of being in relationship. So that is, I think, quite key to change our view of what we want from relationships.
Right. And that was part of what was inspired this summit for me as a therapist, thinking about relationships and, you know, being able to look at conflict as a way to invite us into being different with whomever we're in relationship, rather than as a signal to give up, to use the relationship as a teacher. And it sounds like that's what you're saying.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that is where we're shifting towards, because otherwise it's very hard to move out of the stuckness of a relationship if we don't see it in that way.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, you know, it's a way to stay stuck in. I mean, you had an option to stay stuck in blame and criticizing, and, you know, the loss of whatever the dream was you had with your mother, but you made a different choice that brought you to a different level.
Oh, Paula, don't get me wrong. There were many, many years that I stayed stuck in blame, in my relationship with my mother and my husband, stuck in blame, stuck in anger. But it got more and more and more uncomfortable.
Right.
And stuck and solid in a way that I just did not want to live my life like that. So I was pushed, you know, for want of a better word, almost beyond me, to find a new way of doing it, to find a way of peace within myself, because it's a very uncomfortable place.
It certainly is, and, you know, I certainly share the same process. I mean, I found myself stuck in many relationships, and I think once we begin to understand this process that we're speaking about, and we get a taste of some of the freedom that we can get when we learn a new way to be, I think it gets to the point where we cannot stay stuck anymore. We seek out opportunities to be able to move through this process a little faster. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Once you open the door, there is no going back, thank goodness, because it is only forwards, because it becomes, as I find that as I do the work and as I get to a different level, there's less and less leeway to go back to the old stuck way, and I'm obliged, you know, I'm just pushed all the time to find a new way, to function, to find a new way of doing it, to find the, you know, the equanimity that that is that I and that's how I want to live my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. Wonderful. Can you talk a little bit about the relationship with Source? Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. You know, I gave quite a lot of thought to relationship when you asked me to participate in the summit. And every way that I looked at it, I kept coming back to the same thing. And that is, in essence, the relationship with self. Mm-hmm. And to me, the relationship with self includes the relationship that we have with some higher intelligence. Call it whatever you like. I don't want to get stuck in labels. But for me, what happened was, in a moment of grace, that's the only way I can describe it, deep in process, in the spiritual divorce process, I came face to face with myself. I met myself. And I realized that I had been the most formidable warrior. And the biggest battle that I was waging, and perhaps the biggest battle that we all wage, is with ourselves. And in that moment, I agreed to put down my armor, to put down my weapons against me, and start making peace and enter the most significant relationship of my life. And what the way I think it works is that we enter a relationship with self. And I think the most important thing is becoming the center of our own circle. And then recognizing, as I said before, that relationships are there as a mirror to reflect back to us the wounds, where we need healing, our trigger points, what we need to address. And invariably, it's very seldom about the other person. And we start to make peace within ourselves, then we change internally, we show up in the world in a different way, and then others shift and change. Because the only control we have, there is nothing we can change except ourselves and our thoughts. So many of us in a relationship are trying to change the other. But my experience is that the only way for the other person to shift is we have to shift ourselves, and then the others change. And that, to me, is the essence of the dance of relationship. That's the essential paradigm. And it always, always comes back to the relationship with self.
Exactly. Makes sense. So Jenny, my next question is, can you offer us, from your experience, from your work, tools to help us move forward and perhaps support options?
Yeah, I have quite a lot. And what I've done is I've divided them into options that we can do for ourselves to be the center of our own circles. And that I've divided into two, again, into the things we can do for our inner world, our own internal work, and stuff we can do externally in the outer world, and then also a couple of suggestions to do as a couple or in partnership, you know, which, you know, whatever applies. So I think the first important thing is to be the center of your own circle. And one concept that I feel is absolutely critical is to feel comfortable with the notion of putting yourself at the center of your universe. And I've had many discussions about the difference between being selfish and taking for self. And in my view, they are two very different things. And I have been called selfish many, many times when I move towards taking what I need to honor myself. I think selfishness is when we do things at somebody else's expense. But taking for self is what we do, what we need to do to love, to nourish, to honor ourselves. And the classic example is when you are on a flight, when you're flying and the air hostess stands up to give the safety demonstration. She says, in the event of an emergency, the oxygen mask will fall from the cabin above you. Please put your own mask on first before assisting anybody else, including children. So the stronger, the more vital, the more whole we can be, the more able we are to help others. And so I work very hard on my inner world, on keeping myself as strong and as whole as possible. And the first thing that I'm aware of is I have to be constantly awake and alert to what is going on inside. So that entails noticing when I'm triggered by somebody else, noticing when I'm feeling or not feeling, and being aware that my body is constantly expanding and contracting, just noticing that flow, and just taking short segments of space. And what I mentioned before, I think probably the most important thing I've ever learned is to feel my feelings. And that is, to me, so key. So it's been a whole journey. How do we actually learn to feel our feelings? And everything in our society has told us not to do that. And what I'm still aware of is I'm aware of a subtle pushing away of times where I don't want to feel bad. I don't want to feel whatever I'm feeling, and then I notice that, and then I stop that. It's a subtle push away, and it's a learning to be comfortable in my discomfort. So there are a number of things I do to feel my feelings. One is to use our most amazing resource, which is our breath, and just to breathe in and out and allow the body to relax, and to then go into the body and feel, where is the feeling? And then make it very tangible. What is its color? What is its size? What does it feel like? Does it have a smell? Does it have a texture? And then just being really conscious. And all we have to do is notice them. There's nothing we have to do with them. We just have to notice. The one exception is finding some way of appropriate anger management, because I find that is something that I've really had to learn, is anger, because that was my automatic default response. It was something my family did incredibly well. We can do anger. But I didn't want to show up in the world that way, so I have an array of baseball bats and cushions, and when the time comes and you're in the anger response, I'm learning to take myself away from the situation. Do whatever I need to do. Take the baseball bat. And what I say to my kids is, when you are angry, anything goes. You can say what you like. You can scream what you like. You beat the hell out of that cushion, as long as you do not hurt somebody else. And then when that is complete, you come back and you address whatever needs to be addressed. So feeling feelings, finding ways to manage anger. And a wonderful friend of mine, Jacob Lieberman, he says, everything that is swept under the carpet, we're going to trip over. So it's about really keeping our space clean and clear. Another invaluable resource for me is to trust my intuition, feeling my just that small inner voice that tells me what I need to do, how I need to live my life, what is my best choice. And there is a very simple way that I use this, because sometimes it's not that easy to really feel what is it we need to do, what is that inner voice saying. So I would encourage people to learn in their bodies, what is my yes? So think of a situation where somebody asks you to do something, you say, yes, absolutely, I'm in, I want to do that. And there's not a hesitation, you know, with every part of your being, that you want to do that. That's your body's yes. And then become familiar with your body's no. Somebody says something and it's like, oh, no, not really. Doesn't feel good. That's your body's no. And then when it's a maybe, I've learned to do nothing. I wait until it becomes a yes or a no. So really get to know your intuitive signature. And then you will be guided exactly where you need to go, whether or not it makes sense to other people, and sometimes it doesn't make sense to you either. But that is, I have found, the most profound way to live my life. Another wonderful way of doing inner work is dream work. It's a wonderful access to our inner subconscious world, and there are many facilities available that will help you with dream work. And what I find is one of the greatest impediments is my mind. I have a very active mind. I call it my fanatic in the attic, or excuse my language, the itty bitty shitty committee that sits on my shoulder and chirps and tells me what I should or shouldn't be doing and how I'm not good enough. And I've learned that that voice is not always offering me what is best for me. So I understand that it's only doing its job. And here's where the power of choice comes in, to change your thoughts, to change the way you think. And a perfect example is I live in a small town where for most of the year we have about 80,000 people, and in December during holiday times it's 12 to a couple of 100,000 people. And I went shopping, and the main shopping center was completely packed. I couldn't find a parking. I was in the supermarket. There were trolley fights. You couldn't get in. There wasn't produce on the shelf. The queue for the checkout was going round outside the store. I was getting so stressed and so worked up. And so I realized, hang on, I have tools. So I took a deep breath, and I thought, how can I see this in a different way? So I thought, wow, great, I'm not in a hurry. And I'm so glad that there's so many people here, because the shopkeepers need this income to keep them going for the year. Oh, and actually, if I look around, there's some quite interesting people for me to look at. And immediately my whole feeling shifted. My whole sense of stress disappeared. So that's key, where we have choice to change our thoughts, to change the negative tape. Another wonderful attribute is finding gratitude. So when we least feel like it, what can we be grateful for? How can we find the gifts in our life? And acceptance, just as I said before, seeing the person, the people in our lives exactly for who they are, and not expecting them and wanting them to be any different. And that in itself is the greatest liberation. And releasing judgment. So every time you catch yourself judging, see how you can see the person, see how you can see the situation differently, and finding gratitude. And then also just to elaborate on perception, and just a shift of perception, which I explained in the beginning was the key for me to really start the forgiveness process. I've realized that perception is just a breath. It's just a breath and a thought. And Marcel Proust says it beautifully, and he says that the real voyage of discovery is not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. So find a way to shift your thoughts, change the way that you think, finding a way of just shifting the perception, of changing the filter of your life. And then using intention, which is an incredibly powerful tool. And then meditation, setting up a sacred space, and just showing up each day just as a meeting with yourself and as the divine. And those are in essence what I do for my inner work, for my inner world stuff. On an external level, I love to dance. I find it's a wonderful way of releasing, shifting feelings, shifting emotions. So it can be as simple as just putting on some really evocative music and letting the music move you. You can bring the feeling, the emotions, into the dance if you want, or joining a dance class. Do a workshop. And then what I think is really important is what I call honoring. So honoring is a big topic that encompasses really everything that you need to do to look after yourself and your needs. And prime, and this is one of the areas that I feel very strongly about, that I learned hugely about when I had heavy metal poisoning, is about nutrition and what we put into our bodies and what we feed ourselves. Because unless we put really good quality fuel into our bodies, we don't feel so good. And if we think about the fact that our bodies are with us from when we're born, and they're with us when we die. They are our constant companions. And I found that when I was sick, that was all I could think of. It was very hard to move from, oh, I feel so bad, to anything else in my life. So eating good food, making sure that you drink good water, that you, if you can, breathe good air, limit toxins, do exercise. Learning to say no, learning to say yes, and meaning what you say, creating boundaries, all of that I consider honoring. So do whatever you need to do in your life to really honor what you need. And a wonderful tool that I use is what I call a magic box. And I have a beautiful magic box made by some local women who took the top of soda cans, and they've made beautiful boxes. So find a beautiful box, and then what I've done is I took pieces of paper and I wrote suggestions of everything that I need to do to honor myself and put it in a box. And every now and again, I put my hand in the box and choose a piece of paper, like choosing an angel card. Ah, today I need to go for a walk on the beach, or today I need to go and meet a friend. And it's just a lovely way of keeping current with what you need to do to honor yourself. And talking about going out to nature, I think that is an absolutely critical part of our feeling good. And in fact, what they call the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that they use to classify psychiatric diseases, is now considering whether a disorder called nature deficit disorder is actually contributing to our psychological ill effects. So just making sure you go out in nature as often as you can. I'm very blessed to live in a very beautiful part of the world. But even if you don't, go to a park, sit out in a garden, find some contact with nature. And where this also applies very strongly is, they're talking about it a lot in America as a new paradigm, but it's actually not. It's very, very old, which is taking off your shoes, sitting on the ground, sitting on the earth. When you go on holiday and you sit on a beach and swim and you barefoot and you connect with the earth, you feel really good. And that is because the earth is a magnetic body, and so are we. And by just taking off our shoes, connecting with the earth, we center ourselves, we ground ourselves. They call it earthing and grounding, which is a wonderful way to help center and, you know, keep your center. Create a support network. Find friends. Find systems, body workers, whatever support network works for you. And then there are many different processes you can do to access forgiveness and acceptance. A couple that come to mind is the work of Byron Katie. There's a man called Colin Tipping who does wonderful free exercises that you can do on the web to help in the forgiveness process. And then, as I said before, ceremony and ritual, I think, is so powerful. Make your own, whatever it is. Find a way of releasing, of moving, of allowing endings and beginnings. And what I can share is that when my husband and I separated in December, a friend of mine facilitated a very, very beautiful ceremony where my husband, myself, and my two daughters, we got together, and it was an honoring of the family relationship as it was. And it was the closing of a chapter and allowing a reconfiguration of the family and opening a new chapter so that we can dance in a different way. And the separation has been extremely amicable and as seamless as I think it could possibly be. And I know that the ceremony that we did was instrumental in helping us all to heal and move forward. So I think that that's absolutely vital. And then use whatever means comes to you. Bach remedies, massage, body work, energy work, retreats, cleanses, anything else to strengthen your inner world. So in essence, those are the things that I do for my own inner world. And then, Paul, I just have a couple of suggestions that you can do with a partner, as a couple as well. And so, to do work as a couple, I believe there need to be some absolutely essential ingredients. To me, trust, a mutual commitment, if it's an intimate relationship, love, respect. And if these core fundamentals are not present, then I would really question if the relationship is in your best interest. Are you on the same page? Do you both want to work? And if the answer is no, then just do your own work. Because what I have found is that in the healing from my mother and my husband, I actually did not need their participation. I didn't need to have conversations with them. I didn't need to have dialogues. I needed to heal my heart deep inside myself. And afterwards, it becomes possible to talk. But if you can't do it with the other person, then keep doing the work on your own. And a beautiful, beautiful process that is used all around the world and has been done for thousands of years is a council, or as the Africans say, an indaba, so a meeting. And my husband and I were gifted with a beautiful tool that probably gave us 2 to 3 extra years of relationship, where we had a weekly council. And what we would do is create a beautiful sacred space and set aside time where we wouldn't be interrupted. Create a talking piece, and that can be absolutely anything you want. It can be a stone, a piece of driftwood, something more elaborate. And then it is a space to talk from the heart and to be truly in the listening without thinking of your response, without formulating responses, and then allow each person to continue until complete, and then pass the talking stick. And this process keeps going until it naturally comes to its own end. And I have found that this is an absolutely wonderful way to be in partnership with somebody. And I suppose in a way it's a ceremony, a ritual once again. And then one thing I like to bear in mind is the wonderful 4 agreements, Don Miguel Ruiz, which is be impeccable with your words. And it's really important the way we speak to somebody. And if we're not in a place to speak to them with respect, go and do some anger management. Go and do whatever needs to be done, and then come back when you can speak with respect. And don't take anything personally, I think, is absolutely paramount, because what happens so often is we take it personally. Oh, this person did that. They did this. They didn't do that. And actually, it probably has nothing to do with that at all. And then not to make assumptions. It says itself. And then to always do your best. So I love to keep those in mind when working with relationship. And then what I found is really important is something like a date night. So once a week, put aside time in a diary, because it's so easy to get lost in our very, very busy worlds. And we land up not having the time to really connect with our significant other in any way. But if we put a time in our diary and say, this is our time to have fun, not to go to a movie, because in the movie there's not much interaction. Go and do something. Have fun. Just share some times. And I think that's important to just maintaining a relationship. And then, you know, if necessary, finding the therapist, the Imago therapy like you do, find whatever works for you as a couple or as partnership. And in essence, that is what I do to keep my relationships going.
Thank you, Jenny. Before we sign off, I was wondering if you would let our listening audience know how to follow your work, how to get in contact with you. I'm sure there are people that have lots of questions. Your talk has been totally inspiring, and I found myself tracking along with you in my own journey. How might we get in touch with you and your work?
I think the best way at this point in time is my email address. Do you want me to give that to you now, or will you make it available to the listeners?
We'll do it both ways.
So my email address is jengardy, JenGardy, at wol.co.za. I haven't yet got to the point where I'm social media literate. That is still a step that I need to take.
Okay. Well, we have ways in which our audience will be able to contact you. We will put that in the letter that will go out the day before your interview actually airs. So no worries about that. I want to thank you so much for sharing yourself with us on the summit, your journey. It's been such important work that you've done and an important lesson for us. I thank you for for teaching us today.
That is my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for the gift of being able to share.
This is Imago Providence, Discover the Languages of Love Summit, where we are exploring conflict as a natural process in relationships rather than a signal to give up. If you have enjoyed this conversation, here's how you can hear a repeat. You can sign up for VIP access on the summit's website, discoverlanguagesoflove.com/welcome. Signing up for VIP access allows you to download all the interviews so you can enjoy them at your leisure. If you'd like to let friends know about this free event series, send them to discoverlanguagesoflove.com or to Imago Providence on Facebook. You can also continue the conversation on our Facebook page, where we post highlights from the summit and your comments about what you've heard. Thank you for joining us on this sacred journey.